Welcome to Community Connections, a podcast series by Virginia Voice that explores subjects relevant to you. We're making connections with leading experts on a variety of topics. Keep listening to hear conversations with information you won't hear anywhere else. Allison Martin, welcome to Virginia Voice. Allison Martin is the Assistant Commonwealth Attorney for Henrico County. Welcome, Allison.
Thank you so much for having me, Yvonne. I am thrilled to be here. And what a treat to be on a program that's titled Community Connections. A big part of my job, one of the things that we really try to do in the Commonwealth Attorney's Office is make important connections with our community partners and with folks to try to keep them from becoming victims of crime. So I could not be more delighted to be here with you.
When I was looking at your resume, you have dealt with some really, I guess you would say, interesting, but also I suppose your job is not always happy or positive.
I deal with very weighty subjects every single day. Obviously, no one is seeking the help of the criminal justice system if things are going a-okay. It is always my desire to make people, particularly victims, feel heard on what could be the time that they're forced to describe one of the most difficult or challenging experiences of their lives. I absolutely adore the work that I do, and I take it seriously because it involves such complex and weighty matters for the folks who are involved. So it's very important to me that I do it as well as I possibly can every day.
Well, thank you for saying that. From the outside looking in, when I hear your title, I would say that I have, first of all, no real concept, right, of your daily life, what it looks like. But I also really appreciate the way you bring your personal perspective to it in that conversation, because I never thought about how much heart you have in order to enjoy protecting people and looking out for the entire Henrico County and with the Commonwealth Attorney's Office. I will say that looking at your resume, this is not the first time you've worked in this space. Would you give us a little background on your work history?
It's not. You're nice to ask. I am a proud, lifelong resident of the Commonwealth of Virginia with a few notable exceptions. I grew up in Richmond. I was a fan district kid and graduated from the College of William & Mary in 1992. I participated in the Teach for America program for 2 years after my graduation from William & Mary, where I taught English on the Mexican-American border. After I completed that assignment, then I went to law school in Philadelphia. And after I finished my law school experience, I started practice at a large law firm in Delaware originally, and then I relocated back home to lovely and beautiful Richmond. I enjoyed that work, but it did not satisfy my desire to contribute to my community. So after a lot of soul searching, I pivoted first to the public defender's office in the city of Richmond, and then took a job once my husband's work moved us to rural Oregon. I took a job in the district attorney's office, which is the functional equivalent of the Commonwealth's attorney's office. And for the first time, I realized that I was doing the work that I was meant to be doing in such a large way, working with victims of violent crime, horrific crime, and really being able to be present with them and working very hard to get them good outcomes after something so horrible had happened. Probably the most notable case that I handled in Oregon was the successful prosecution of a man who shot off the face of an on-duty police officer. And walking the journey with that hero who unbelievably managed to live through the experience, right? He had been airlifted out of the small community in which we were living and taken to Portland, Oregon, where a team of surgeons was sort of able to reconstruct the destroyed facial features. Was truly remarkable. And getting to be with him made me realize that I was doing what I should be doing. unfortunately, my husband's work took us from rural Oregon to Charlotte, North Carolina, and I prosecuted in Charlotte, North Carolina for about 18 months. Notable matters that I handled there primarily involved cases involving child victims of homicides. And when my husband's work moved us back to Richmond, I realized that that's the space in which I wanted to practice. I practiced in the city of Richmond, Commonwealth's attorney's office, for about 4 years, and then the opportunity to work for Shannon Taylor made itself available to me. And I knew at that point in my career that I really wanted to drill down and specialize in two areas, crimes committed against children and crimes committed against senior citizens. And in many ways, Yvonne, those two populations, which are our most vulnerable populations and our populations that are least able to advocate for themselves, are populations that are uniquely interesting and compelling for me as a prosecutor. When I reach the end of my life, I want to be able to say that I took care of people who were unable to take care of themselves. And that's why I made the switch. And I've been in the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office for Henrico County for about 4 years now. And it's a wonderful opportunity because I am doing the work about which I am passionate and about which I truly believe if we cannot protect our seniors and our children in our communities, then we're not doing it right. I've been very, very fortunate to have a career progression that has been meaningful to me in so many different ways. The doors sort of keep on opening, which is truly, truly wonderful. So I feel very fortunate to do what I'm being offered the opportunity to do every day.
Well, then it's perfect that we should be talking today, because when you use the word advocate, you're getting into our space as well and crossing over. It's one of the things I think that makes our community so rich. There are just so many organizations that do have influence in the lives of those who cannot care for themselves in one way or the other. And I think that we do find that common goal of bettering our communities. A lot of that comes with advocacy. And so you mentioned horrific crimes, and I think that that's a great segue into the specific topic we wanted to talk about today. And when we're trying to help the people that we serve here at Virginia Voice, one of the things that came to mind when I heard you speak at the West Richmond Rotary Club, I thought we have to bring some information to our listeners, because I think when the phone rings and it's someone who says, hey, I'm calling from bank blah blah, could you just verify your social security number and your bank number? Or you get an email or a text. It looks innocent. It doesn't look bad. I had a text that came in from, it looked like my bank. And then this guy was saying, you know, hey, it looks like you have some fraud and you need to do X, Y, and Z. And without going too far in it, because this is your specialty, you're the one who hears this every day. But when I finally got to the bottom of it, he finally asked the right question to send up the red flares. Could you confirm your bank information? I thought, well, you're the one calling from the bank. Why do I need to give you my bank information? It was a cloaked call. When I called the same number back as I hung up on the guy, it was actually my bank. And that was just like, oh my goodness, how do you defend yourself against these bad players who are getting smarter and smarter? AI is no help to us, but we'll get back to that. But, you know, how do we really protect ourselves?
I love that you raised that issue, because crimes like the one that you just articulated are crimes that hit across all socioeconomic backgrounds. They hit across all demographics in our population, and everyone is susceptible to them. Yvonne, I'll tell you, not too long ago, I had a call come in from someone who purported to be calling from my Verizon service provider. I got as close as providing them with my credit card information before I realized that it was a scam operation. It's happening to everyone, and it's happening across all parts of the population. The thing that I think is so important to talk about in the context of talking about fraud and scam, particularly for vulnerable populations, is that it's the kind of crime that is so easily perpetrated against people who are minding their own business and not getting into any kind of trouble. What we know is that we have all kinds of scams for which folks are uniquely vulnerable to that are coming to us across both phone and the internet all the time. And I think it's so smart of your organization to start talking about that. One of the easiest ways that you can keep yourself protected from these kind of scam crimes is simply not answering the telephone when you don't recognize the person who is calling. If the person is not in your contacts, let it go to voicemail and they can leave a message and you can return a phone call if you want to. That is something that I'm 51 years old and I grew up in a universe where we were taught that it was polite to always pick up the telephone, identify yourself, and engage with the caller. Those old rules of prompt and professional telephone engagement are over. It is perfectly okay to let a call go to voicemail and return the call if you think that it's appropriate to do so.
Wow, you just hit on something so important. You know, growing up, we were even taught how to answer the phone.
Absolutely.
It was a big deal. Yeah. And I can't imagine doing what I do now, which is do not disturb. You know, I just let it go or I tell my phone to go to voicemail. But if you are someone who is either blind or low vision and you cannot see the actual call coming in, I imagine it is hard to just ignore it. But if they're legitimate, they're going to either leave a message or call back. I have so many calls that come in on my phone that never leave a message.
Right. And what's actually happening when you get those phone calls, and I'm as susceptible to them as everyone else, is typically what you'll see when you get a phone call and you pick up and you say, hello, hello, and you don't hear anyone on the other line. What is likely happening is that your voice is being recorded so that your phone number and your voice can be spoofed, because AI can now duplicate your voice with appropriate tone and emotion if they get as little as 3 seconds of your voice.
Oh my.
Which is a crazy thing, right? And that didn't even exist for us 5 years ago. So all of the AI technology is very much on the cutting edge. And obviously, AI is phenomenal for so many reasons, and it's going to revolutionize our lives. But with this amazing technology, there are bad actors in our communities who are always looking to figure out how to take that technology and use it for ill. What you have to remember, Yvonne, is most of the phone scammers and most of the internet scammers that you're seeing are the product of organized crime. They're not typically folks who are working one-off in their basement, right? They are organized. They're using oftentimes what we now know can frequently be human trafficked labor to create the labor folks who actually go into the phone systems and are reaching out and making these affirmative telephone calls. So AI has sort of really turned the entire industry in terms of scammers on its head, and will continue to do so for the next 10 to 15 years. And so it is important for people to be very, very, very protective about who they give their phone information to and who they give their internet information to. There is no reason that people who you don't know on the internet need access to your email address, for example. There's no reason that people that you don't know on the internet need access to any of your passwords. All of those things, practicing good internet and phone hygiene with respect to being very, very clear about your personal boundaries, can really help keep you very safe, especially if you are low vision or no vision and are dependent on other people. Those pieces of information should only be known to a few trusted individuals and shouldn't be placed out on the internet.
Absolutely. And you know, when I think about going out, okay, so I go to the store or I go to get my hair done or I'm in a public space, and many times I'm invited to use the Wi-Fi in that space. When I get in that public space, I actually turn Wi-Fi off. Now, I can do that because I have data on my phone.
Right.
But even if you have a limited amount of data on your phone, wouldn't you still recommend that?
Obviously, there can be situations where you have to weigh risk versus reward depending on where you are and what you were doing. But just remember that the internet is awesome and it is a super highway, like Interstate 64 and like Interstate 95. We've got to use it. That's the world that we're living in now. But there are, like speed limits, safety rules that you should adhere to, like maybe not going on public Wi-Fi, that are designed to keep us all safe. So absolutely, yes.
Talking about phone calls, if I get a phone call and I get duped, in other words, I answer it and I realize, wait a minute, I don't think this is the number I thought it was. I literally don't say anything.
Sure. Or you can hang up. That's also a choice that you can make. Internet scammers are extraordinarily talented and extraordinarily effective at what they do. I will give you an example because it's important for your listeners to know that being scammed on either the phone or the internet happens to everyone. I just talked to a friend the other day who called me while she was on the phone with someone purporting to be a federal marshal who told her that she was going to be arrested because she had not appeared for federal jury duty. The phone call came in from a phone number that appeared to be legitimate from the federal courthouse downtown in Richmond, Virginia, and the person who was on the other end was so tremendously convincing that my friend was about to give her credit card information and her driver's license information to this individual on the other side of the phone. Before she did that, she said, you know, I think I'll just call my friend who's a prosecutor and find out whether or not this is legit. And I had her on one phone and he had her on another phone. And I could hear the convincing that was taking place. And she almost didn't believe me. And I said, hang up the phone. If it's legit, you can always call the courthouse back and reconnect. And finally, that's what convinced her to hang up the telephone. But it is across all educational background lines, across all socioeconomic lines, across all age lines, across all levels of ability. These internet and phone scammers are extraordinarily talented, and they are taking advantage of people in all sectors of the population. And the financial loss that we are experiencing as a community is extraordinary. So everyone in our community is vulnerable to duping of all different kinds and types.
You know, Allison, I've met you now twice. You seem like a really nice person. But I would not want to be on the wrong side of the law with you. I just appreciate the intensity in which you work. But I also appreciate you saying that about everyone being vulnerable, because I think if you are an older adult and you live alone, Richmond was voted the fourth loneliest city in the United States. I think that was about 3 or 4 years ago. It came out in a news blurb. So you're an older adult, you live alone. And if something like this happens to you, I think you tend to look in the mirror and blame yourself or think that, you know, you missed something. And it's not that. We are all capable of it. But I will also say this, that if you are alone and you feel like you just don't have an advocate, then your office, Virginia Voice, and there are other offices that you really need to reach out to and seek that advocate. And that's something that you talk about in terms of, I mean, healthcare, my goodness, what a vulnerable space to be in.
It's so vulnerable. And actually, yesterday I was speaking at a women's club event, and one of the older women talked to me afterwards and described an attempted scam for the collection of healthcare debt. Someone called her and purported to be from Bon Secours Hospital and was seeking to collect a copayment or a deductible from a procedure that she had had. And she said, you know, they almost tricked me. And I said, it makes all the sense in the world to me. And I think that sort of raises the larger issue of what we know statistically is crimes, particularly fraud and financial crimes that are committed against our seniors, are amongst the far most underreported crimes that take place. Only one in about every 24 is ever reported. And there's a variety of reasons for that. And a lot of them loop back to shame and self-blame that our victims feel for having been duped. And what I like to talk to people about is the fact of the matter is that most of the people who are perpetrating these kinds of crimes in our communities are people who are doing it somewhere between 10 and 12 hours a day. So it's their job to pick up the phone and call people until they get a bite at the apple, right? People feel so much shame when they are tricked or trapped. But the fact of the matter is that the perpetrators on the other end of the phone or on the other side of the computer are doing this as their job. They're doing it all the time, and they get really good at it in the way that you get really, really good at playing tennis if you play tennis for 10 to 12 hours a day. So I do want to encourage folks to seek the assistance of the Henrico Police Department, the Richmond Police Department, the Chesterfield Police Department, whatever your local jurisdiction is. There are officers who will not judge you and will not make you feel ashamed because it happens, and it happens with a tremendous amount of frequency, and it's no one's fault. The other thing that we need to remember is that we are seeing a tidal wave in the graying of the population in both Virginia and nationally. We are becoming an older community and an older population, and many of our perpetrators are targeting their victims with that in mind. So those are all things that sort of are laid over the framework of what we are seeing as we are seeing fraud crimes and financial exploitation crimes committed against our senior citizens, many of whom wind up having increasing difficulties with mobility, with vision, and with hearing, all of which make them uniquely susceptible to fraud crimes. That coupled with cognition issues that often develop late in life as well, make this particular population very, very attractive to doers of bad deeds.
Right. And I've had these conversations with people I know. We did not grow up with a smartphone, with the internet, with any of this technology. And if it's not sort of second nature to you and you're learning as you go, you have to be careful. At least I think about that. I'm so glad technology is so available. Our listeners particularly rely on assistive technology, for example, and we try to give support there. But if it's some sort of technology that you're not familiar with, probably best to limit your use until you can kind of get more comfortable with it. For example, texting and receiving text. And every single text looks like it's okay.
Right, 100%. It's interesting. My mom, who I have no concerns about her abilities cognitively whatsoever, will frequently come into a room where I am sitting and say, I've just received a text message from Wells Fargo telling me that they have a concern about my banking information, but I don't have an account with Wells Fargo, but I'm supposed to call them. What should I do? And there's a whole lot of reasons that that text message looks legitimate. It has a Wells Fargo logo that looks okay. All of those things are reasons that you are tempted to immediately re-engage. It is the desire for connection. It's natural human impulse to want to reach back out to someone who has reached out to you. But I think probably the most important tool that we can all take away from this conversation about how to keep yourself safe on the internet and through phone technology is it is always fine to step away. There are very few things in this life that have to be handled in the next 30 seconds. And the more time that you take to think about what you want to do, the more likely you are to make better decisions. Fraudsters prey on the human problem that is created by this false sense of urgency. The easiest way to protect yourself from being the victim of financial fraud is to take the heat out of the moment by taking a breath. A good example of this that we recently had happen, again, in my home church, the church that I grew up in and that has raised me from a child, is that a spammer got into our church directory and he sent out emails to everyone in the church purporting to be from the church's minister. And the email went a little something like this. Hi, this is your minister. I'm in the middle of a meeting and I can't take a phone call, but I can communicate via email. I have a problem that I need you to help me with immediately. Will you please email me back? Unfortunately, several members of our church were convinced by that email because it had the logo from the church that it was a legitimate email. Also, unfortunately, some of them suffered financial loss because the email correspondence went back and forth between the minister who was in a meeting, and I'm using air quotations that you can't see on our podcast. He was in a meeting, so he could not communicate directly by voice with the members of his church. And the ask was, please go to Walmart, get a gift card, because I have a needy family that needs Walmart gift cards. And on its face, it's the most reasonable request in the world. A needy family who needs Walmart gift cards so they can buy school clothes for their children. That makes all the sense in the world. How could that fraud have been avoided? It could have been avoided by the person who was being perpetrated on, by the victim saying, hey, minister, I hear what you're saying. Why don't we plan a time to talk in 3 hours so that I can really understand what you need, right? But it's that desire for human connection. It's the desire to be helpful. Fraudsters prey on good human nature as their way of taking advantage of a system. The other thing that I'll point out in that whole fact pattern is that crime was never reported to law enforcement, which again is an example of how these crimes wind up being wildly underreported. There's no doubt in my mind that several crimes took place that day. They were never reported. They were never investigated. And so what winds up happening in these fraud crimes is if we don't as a community commit to reporting them, prosecuting them when we can, and holding our offenders accountable, there's no repercussions, so there's no change in behavior on the part of the perpetrators. So for all of those reasons, it's extraordinarily important that we take all of these things seriously and that we seek to protect ourselves at every step along the journey.
Yeah, I can't think of a better way to prioritize self-care. You know, that sort of goes along those same lines. Unfortunately, so many different things that we covered today, meaning that there are so many different variations on these crimes, but bringing light to how to handle them, how to respond is so important. And thank you so much, Allison Martin, Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney for Henrico. This has been a really dynamic conversation, and I hope we can bring you back in a while and talk some more. But we appreciate you spending some time with us today in Community Connections.
Thank you so much, Fawn. I've really appreciated it. I hope you guys have a great day.
You've been listening to Community Connections, an original podcast series by Virginia Voice. This episode and others like it are available anytime on demand through our website at www.virginiavoice.org.